The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Got a good one today. Rodney Johnson is on. Of course, he is the backbone of the Dent, Harry Dent research when it comes to demographics, predictable spending patterns. Rodney is the guy that helps study how people spend money as they go through predictable stages of life and how that spending drives the economy, and then how you can use this information to be a successful investor in pretty much any market. So all of this that I've learned about demographics and predictable stages and what people spend money on and what should be hot and not, I learned from Rodney Johnson. So he's kind enough to call in for the show, so he'll be calling in just a little bit. Let's do a news of the week. This week brought to you by Indiana Cutters Football. Join the Indiana Cutters Saturday, July 15th, as they take on Northern Kentucky Colts at Edgewood High School. Wait a second. What is today's date? The 26th. Yeah. So anyway, why don't you go to online to CuttersFootball.net and you can find out what their schedule is. So, hey, I just read it when they put it in my hands, folks. Obviously, I don't prepare. All right. It's been 10 years since it's not been 10 years since the big crash, but I thought this was pretty interesting. People are always trying to say, what should I put in as an assumption for my growth rates on my stocks? Well, this comes from By the Number Research. The S&P 500 was up 7.2% per year for the 10 years ending June 30th of 2017. So that included, of course, the big drop in 2008, early 2009. Interestingly enough, for the 10-year period ending June 30th of 2007, the S&P was up 7.1% per year. So that included the 2000, 2001, 2002 tech bubble and burst. So I always say to people, use 7 or use 7.2 if you're going to look at a long-term projection. And you may still be wrong. I mean, it might be worse or it might be better and probably will be one of the two. All right, in the year 2035, the Social Security trustees announced here just about a week ago that the trust fund backing the payments of Social Security would be zip in 2035. Now, a zero trust fund does not mean the payments of Social Security benefits would go to zero, but they say they would drop to 77% of their originally promised levels through the year 2091. Interestingly enough, when you go back and see what the trustees said back in 2007, 10 years ago, they said the trust fund would be depleted in 2042. So that's a pretty big difference. What's that, 7 years? We've knocked off that number. So anyway, the disability trust fund had been projected to actually be depleted by the fourth quarter of 2016. That forced Congress, and this was kind of quiet, to allocate more of the 12.4% combined payroll taxes collected from employers and employees for 3 years, 16, 17, and 18. Those additional funds propped up the disability trust fund to push the date where it's exhausted to 2028, or about 11 years away. That, of course, comes from Social Security. 401k firms are starting to sweeten the pot. Firms with 401ks are starting to sweeten the pot. Some companies are raising contributions to lure talent and ensure older workers retire on time. See, they need to ensure that the older workers retire because it's expensive to have old workers. Their health costs is more, their salaries are higher. So if they do this, they can get people in a position to where they can afford to retire, because if they can't afford to retire, they don't retire and they keep making a lot of money and they keep dragging on your health care costs. So I thought that was pretty interesting. You're going to see that as we start to see, you know, more and more companies try to lure talent in and keep talent. They're going to have to offer some sweet deals like this. And finally, Tesla boss warns on artificial intelligence. And we're going to talk to Rodney Johnson about this. Elon Musk warned at a gathering of U.S. governors that they need to be concerned about the potential dangers from the rise of artificial intelligence and called for the creation of a regulatory body to guide development of the powerful technology. He laid out several worst-case scenarios for this, and he said that this technology could threaten all human jobs and that artificial intelligence could even spark a war. He said it's the biggest risk we face as a civilization. I thought that was funny or fascinating to hear, and the article was in the Wall Street Journal, because I just went to a meeting where we had someone speak on artificial intelligence, and it was really, really something else. So, like in my field, I'm going to have to embrace artificial intelligence at some point to better serve our clients. I don't want artificial intelligence to replace me, right? All right, we're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we'll be joined by Rodney Johnson. Rodney, of course, is the backbone and the research behind the Harry Dent research on demography, or some people would call it that. Just how people spend money and how many people are at the different ages and stages of life in our country and around the world, and why that drives economic activity. We'll be talking to him about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. As promised, Rodney Johnson, longtime friend of the show, is joining me now. And Rodney, of course, works closely with Harry Dent. And we don't have Harry on because Harry scares people. So Rodney comes on and actually talks in a more calm, rational way, so I don't get phone calls. But he helps people. He helps study how people spend their money, how they go through these predictable stages of life, how spending drives our economy. And you can use this information, obviously, from an investment perspective. Rodney began his financial services career back in the 1980s, and he's been a regular guest on lots of national radio shows, and newsletter, I guess you would call it, Economy and Markets, and he writes Boom and Bust. So, Rodney, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, David.
Hey, Rodney, you know, I wanted to start off with just general market stuff, but I really want to give you a lot of credit because you're the guy that taught me how to follow spending patterns, how to know how many people were at different ages and stages of life, just so that, and it was just cool. It was cool to see all the stuff that you taught us back in the old demographic school. I went to it so many times I could almost teach it. But you would tell us things like, okay, this is when fast food might start to have trouble because the kids are going to be past a certain age. You taught us about how salty snacks, what was the peak age of purchasers of salty snacks, or the big one for me is real estate. I mean, forever you talked about how I call them echo boomers, I guess millennials, would start to move into creation of families. They would start to buy homes. And I'm not sure if it's like this where you are, but if there's a home on the market that's like that, a starter home, it's not on the market more than an hour or two. It's gone. But the great big homes, you can't sell because no one's there to buy them. And you predicted all this stuff all the way through, so it's really cool to see it unfolding right before your eyes. You got to live long enough and get old, though, to see it actually happen.
You do. And they are trends that happen over many, many years. And so, as you mentioned, you know, we were talking about these in the old demographic school we used to run. Well, that goes back to the early 2000s. So we're talking 15 years ago now. And we were talking about things that would happen in, you know, 2008, 2009, when the boomers, the largest generation at the time, would slow their spending because their kids were then leaving. They were more focused on paying down debt and saving for retirement. And it would take the wind out of the sails of the economy, which it did. And that real estate would roll over, which it did. And we've done a lot of things as a nation and central bank and other things, you know, and don't forget, you know, $800 billion in stimulus to try and, you know, mitigate that. Mm-hmm. But if you look at GDP growth, it's still very low. I mean, we're running under 2% and have been for more than half a decade. And so we're still in the time frame of the boomers not living poorly, but certainly much more focused on paying down debt and saving for retirement and even being in retirement. And the millennials are just now moving into that family formation and heavy spending on their own. And it was interesting you mentioned real estate and the millennials. I clipped an article out of the paper. I'm always clipping articles about how first-time home buyers finally came back to the market last year, where they've been absent for a decade. And it's a couple of things. It's that the millennials didn't find jobs that were, you know.
Oh, we lost Rodney.
They just weren't sure where things.
Rodney, you're cutting out on us, my man.
No, just living for the moment, this and that. Absolutely not true. study after study has shown that they still want to do these things. They may be fearful of them. They may think that they don't have enough money, but they still want to get married. They still want to have kids. They still want to do the normal things. And David, as you know, and we've talked about many times on the radio and off, having kids, you're never ready for. They're always more expensive. You never think you have enough, but you just take the plunge. And so the millennials will do it too, and they'll ramp up their spending also.
They'll figure it all out. So looking at demographics right now, we have 10,000 people a day turning 70 in America. What's the next big thing to watch out for?
You know, clearly I'm way too excited about things other people think. What in the world are you talking about?
I like it.
I was just going through this. The Internet of Things is not here yet. And the Internet of Things, meaning your light bulbs are connected, your refrigerator's connected. Those are the simple ones that people talk about, right? But do you really need to look on your phone to look in your refrigerator? I mean, and if you looked in mine, you'd probably squint and go, what is all that stuff in Tupperware? I never have that nicely arranged refrigerator that they show on television and stuff. But the point of the Internet of Things will be aging in place. And it's a meeting of three or four trends that are going to happen at the same time. You say 10,000 people a day or a year turning, I'm sorry, a day turning 70. I hear we have a monumental task in front of us caring for the aging generation. We do not have enough space in nursing facilities or even assisted living facilities. And even if we did, they don't want to be there. And so the name of the game for the next 20 years is going to be aging in place. And so we're going to have to cobble together the resources to allow our parents and, you know, other people's parents to remain in their homes as long as possible. And we're going to push the boundaries on that. And so it's going to be, yes, sometimes we're going to have an assistant that checks in on them, you know, a home health care person comes in once a day, once a week. But what we're going to do is just totally transform the living space for our older relatives so that we can check in on them from afar. And it's not going to be, you know, the creepy cameras in the corner watching them sit there, you know, watching Wheel of Fortune. You know, some of that's going to happen, but it's going to be more like automatic reminders of taking your medicines in a medical dispensary on the counter so that you can see that those medicines actually have been dispensed for the day. You're going to have Alexa and Google Home become an integral part of the elderly population's day because it can call them an Uber. You're going to say, Alexa, get me an Uber ride to my doctor's appointment. Get me a self-driving car from Waymo that's owned by Google to get me to, you know, the bingo game. Whatever it is, we're going to transform that living at home through technology so that we can suck all of the cost out of caring for that generation as they age in place. And it's going to be exciting.
Oh, it'll be, and scary, because I can tell you this, and we're going to take a break when we come back. I'll ask you about this, but I'm sure you read this article in the Wall Street Journal. But Elon Musk warned a gathering of U.S. governors that they needed to be concerned about the potential dangers from the rise of artificial intelligence. And he called on a regulatory body to kind of guide the development. And he laid out some worst-case scenarios for AI, saying that the technology will threaten all human jobs and that AI could even spark a war, and it's the biggest threat we face as a civilization. So that's why, as I think about all this artificial intelligence, I mean, it really does kind of freak me out. So when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about more about technology and how we see it shaping not just our lives, but then how should we be thinking about investing to make sure that we're ahead of this rather than way, way, way behind. So, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with Rodney Johnson. Well, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. That music made me feel so much better because it's very, very hot in the studio, and I was talking with Rodney off the air and told him how hot it really was, but, you know, he lives in Texas, and I think he told me it was around 100 degrees and 85% humidity, so he told me, quit complaining, Hayes, quit complaining. Rodney, before we went to the break, we talked about Elon Musk making a pretty bold statement to a bunch of governors on how artificial intelligence could potentially be the largest risk to humanity for the most part, the way you put it, and that it's going to replace every single job out there. And the reason I bring that up is for years we've been able to, through your research,
predict how things were going to kind of unfold. You know, we could predict how the creation of the young family, what the things they would buy. You know, we mentioned real estate earlier, peak enrollments, universities, all kinds of stuff you could kind of predict. But with this, with technology moving so quick and with the invention, I guess, of artificial intelligence, could that really change things for us? And how do we get ahead of this so that from an investment perspective, we're not looking behind, we're not saying, oh my gosh, we missed it?
Well, the key here is that we've always changed. We've always had technological advance. We've always moved forward by leaps and bounds. And we've always made somebody obsolete. I understand what he's saying. But we made, of course, you know, people who work on the line at car manufacturers somewhat obsolete. We produce more cars in the United States today than we ever have in the history of the country. And yet we have many fewer people by, you know, tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands less people working in auto manufacturers than we did in the 70s because we automated. Same thing, you know, you and I came along and it was personal computers. And everybody said, what am I going to do with that thing? And now, of course, we can't live without them. We don't have as many secretaries. We don't have stenographers. We don't have people keeping your calendar, all sorts of things. We do it ourselves. The U.S. mail, we sent about 40% less first-class mail than we did in 2000 because email just knocked it out. And so we've always been innovating and kind of pushing through these different industries and watching them decline in employment. And yet here we are with very low unemployment. And it's all on that other side. And it's interesting to talk about it in those ways of watching these demand changes happen over time. It's following demand that allows you to look at the investment. You want to see what people will be demanding the most in the years ahead. And that shows you where the interest is going to be. And you'll see the employment move that direction. We talked in the first segment about people getting older. You're going to see more employment in people figuring out how to help the older generation retire in place and to remain in place as they move through the later stages of retirement. You're going to see more people in services. I mean, how many 70-year-olds want to mow their grass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to see a lot of things change as we deal with services that are non-mechanized things that are custom, where you have a lot of one-on-one conversation. And that's something that artificial intelligence and robotics might get to, but it's not in our lifetime.
Well, and Elon Musk, he's kind of a freak anyway, right? He lived in his own little bubble out there.
Yes, he does.
I mean, he made a lot of money with PayPal, I know that. And then pretty much, I mean, has he lost money ever since? Because I don't really know how he has all this money.
Well, he does a really good job of making a little bit of money. I mean, like $10 million here and there, and then he'll lose $20 million at Tesla. But remember, every Tesla that goes out the door loses money. He makes money by selling zero-emission auto credits to other car manufacturers, literally. That's what the business is about. Every time he puts a Tesla on the road, he can sell a zero-emission car credit to General Motors and Fiat Chrysler and Ford and anybody else who needs it to satisfy their requirement for whatever government they're under. And so you and I are helping make him billions.
So, there we go. So, Rodney, let's think about this. We have 10,000 people a day in America turning 70, which means that the big opportunity, obviously, in the health sector and a lot of, you know, we have a big problem with dementia. Alzheimer's kind of an epidemic. And I've heard you say that, yeah, we're building all these big facilities. We don't have nearly enough, but people really don't even want to go there anyway. And I would agree with that. They want to stay home. Mm-hmm. So that's going to create some opportunities, and you just have to be aware of that. From the younger people, you know, what about them? I mean, we they're going to act and do the same things that their parents did, maybe just a little bit later. And also, what about immigration?
Exactly
what about immigration as well? I mean, we always talked about the immigrants and how they could come in and help fill the void in some different areas.
Theoretically, you could have, you know, you have this dip in the population that it's at its peak spending age. And it's actually the you know, Gen Xers, people just my generation, your generation,
right,
but now a little bit younger than me now that I'm 50. We're kind of past the point of those people adding in because we've been through the last 10 years. And it really is 10 years, 2007 to 2017, of having Gen X being the group to carry the ball, which is why GDP remains low. Now we're getting into, or very close to, the 2020s, and that's when the millennials will be, you know, walking up their own spending way. They have the children that get on that train that you can't get off of because you're buying more clothes and more more food and a bigger house and bigger cars and all the things you got to do for your kids. And so that's what's going to drive that train, just as their parents did. And so it's focusing on kind of the barbell, the older generation that's in retirement, and it's things as simple as retrofitting homes with stability bars in hallways and bathrooms. It sounds simple, but think about how many people 70 years old suddenly need bathroom bars. That type of renovation is going to drive so much over the next 10 years. And then at the other end, like you said earlier, starter homes or any home less than $200,000, $220,000, they get snapped right up. And so it's building the infrastructure around new neighborhoods like that that's really going to drive the economy.
Rodney Johnson is our guest, and I learned all this demographer stuff from Rodney and how to see things unfolding right before our eyes. It's really, really fascinating stuff to me, and I think if you know this, then you're not surprised. And that's why I'm always somewhat surprised when you hear, like, the Fed chairperson or anybody in the government talk about how they're baffled about how certain things aren't happening. And, you know, I just look and say, well, there's not enough people there to do the things that need to be done to create the results that they want. So it's pretty interesting stuff to know this. And I'm sure they know it. I just don't know how they don't really know it well enough to be able to talk in an educated way about it. Rodney, I'm going to take one quick break. When I come back, I want to get your view of the current market we're in. I want to talk to you a little bit about the international markets, tax reform, healthcare reform, deregulation, all the things that are kind of new, like in the news right now. Because, yeah, all this stuff is really cool, and it's really neat to say, okay, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, these companies that made all of these things to make homes better for elderly, yeah, they did great, and we saw it happen. Or the young people coming through and the predictable things that they're going to do. But most people, like most people, they look at the now. So we want to know what's going on right now. So we'll be back with Rodney Johnson. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Rodney Johnson's my guest. He works closely with Harry Dent to study how people spend their money and go through predictable stages of life, how that spending drives our economy, and how you can use this information to invest successfully in any market. He also writes The Economy and Markets. It's an e-letter, and then Boom and Bust, a newsletter. If you want to check it out, go to dentresearch.com or shoot me an email and we can hook you up. Rodney, we've talked a lot about economic forecasting, people, predictable spending patterns, but when it comes down to investing, people are looking right in the mirror and saying, what's happening right now? We're hitting all-time highs. The bond market still has very low yields. It's really telling us two entirely different things, where the bond market is where I kind of like to kind of lay my faith. And you see 30-year treasuries at 3%, you know, 10 years sticking at, 230 or something. I mean, it's just not going anywhere, which is indicative of what you said, slow growth, slow GDP, low inflation. But on the other hand, you have the market that's going, you know, gangbusters. So that's what's confusing to, I think, a lot of people.
Well, I think there's a lot to the idea of what's called TINA in the marketplace. There is no alternative. Because as we talked about, you know, way back at the beginning of the show, and people going through predictable spending patterns, and the boomers passed their peak in spending in the late 2000s, for the last 10 years, they've been focused more on paying down debt and saving for retirement. Well, what that means is putting money into the stock market and to bonds and to real estate. Well, real estate, you buy your house. Not that many people buy investment real estate. It does happen, but it's not common. The most common thing is just put money in the market, put it in a mutual fund, that sort of thing. And we all know rates are very low and have been for a long time. So the only thing that really has pizzazz is the equity markets. And the Federal Reserve has done a really good job of telling everyone, we've got your back. And so if when 2000 and late 2008 and then 2009 happened and the markets were dropping, you know, dramatically, and everybody wondered what would happen next, well, they got their answer. In March of 2009, the Federal Reserve said, we're going to go buy mortgage-backed bonds to prop up the real estate industry. And then they came out and said, we're also going to buy treasuries to basically prop up the general economy. And so people now have this sense, and because it did happen, that the Fed would stop most anything by spending whatever dollars are necessary to keep the economy or at least the markets going. And so we've all kind of plowed into it. We have very little volatility and rising, you know, equity prices. Now, I'm the first one to be fearful because we have equity growth so far ahead of GDP growth that it seems unreasonable that we can continue in the current trajectory. But I've been thinking that for years, and yet here we are, still growing. And so I think I'm in the group with your clients, people who listen who say, well, okay, everything you know, what do you do now? And it's you don't try and fight this freight train. You get on the train. You understand that if it stops, you want to get off quickly, meaning you know where you're going to sell, you know what you're going to do if things start to roll over. But in the meantime, you ride the train. And this train is all about individual convenience. And it is Amazon. I mean, it's companies like that that are giving you the next generation of a deflationary service that allows you to customize what you want. It is, you know, the Amazon Echo. It is Amazon Delivery and Amazon Prime. And it is their next promise now of meal kits, sending you food ready to be prepped. And so that's the sort of thing I'm looking at as changing the game, making your life more convenient, and even making it a little bit cheaper along the way.
So that's the U.S. market. We've been talking Europe for a long time. We've been almost every person that came through my office that represented a fund family would say, when Europe starts stimulating the way we stimulated here in the U.S., watch out, the market's going to react exactly the same way. Well, that didn't happen. And if you got on that trade, then it was a bad one. But now it seems like that maybe it's time to start dipping your toe over there. If you look at valuations, they're much, much lower than they are here in the U.S. And these are big companies, you know, Siemens, BMW. I mean, these are all companies. I'm not saying you should buy any of these companies, folks. I'm just saying Nestle. A lot of times you'll say a company name, and folks will say, oh, I didn't know that wasn't a U.S. company. But you can get bigger dividends. You're going to buy them cheaper. What do you think about that? Because most people, when you do the research, have very, very little international exposure and sometimes none.
I think some international exposure is good. I mean, I like China still a little bit. They are still growing. I think they have a lot of risk to them. But, you know, like I said, I'm going to ride this train where I see the train moving quickly. Europe got a boost as the dollar lost value over the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. And so that makes European shares more valuable in terms of dollar investors, even if the price doesn't go anywhere. I think that their stock markets and their equities were playing a little bit of catch-up. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to last long. I think that people who are investing overseas need to have an even, you know, tighter rein on that investment because when they do turn and go flat, it's going to happen very quickly. And particularly countries in the Eurozone, people were very worried about Brexit last year. Mm-hmm. It lent another air of question to it that people now feel better about. But Brexit's still out there. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be painful. But the biggest thing is the Europeans are old. And there's nothing they can do to change that. We have a young generation coming along. Ours is going to grow. They don't have it. And so their productivity is going to continue to decline.
I think Germany was hoping the Syrian refugees would solve that problem and kind of turned on them a little bit. Well, just real quick, we have health care, obviously, in the news right now, tax reform, deregulation. I mean, we don't seem to be getting anything done, but that's what I think we're all hoping we'll see to help support what the market has done. What are you seeing on that front? Is a lot of this run-up from the fact that we're expecting corporate taxes to be cut in half, individual small businesses to be cut, deregulation. Is some of this run-up have to do with that?
I think this run-up is counterfactually driven. And I don't know why it's not a bigger story, David. If you were in business in October of 2016 and you were planning for the next 4 years of your business life, it included greater regulation in the EPA, greater regulation on the business side, more from the SEC. It was more incremental steps of what you'd experienced for the last 8 years under a Hillary Clinton administration. And what happened instead is you didn't just not get all of that continuing on. You got somebody in the White House and then in Congress who wants to roll back previous regulations that were, you know, time-consuming and costly. And so the notion that you not only don't have this growth path of greater regulation, but you have this other path of deregulation, even if it's the little changes, is a game changer. And that's what happened to business. We don't get health care reform. You know what? That's okay. We're going to get along just as poorly or well, however you kind of view that one, as we were before. On tax reform, we'll get something. I don't know what it'll be, but it'll be something. At least it's going to be a repatriation of the $2 trillion sitting overseas for corporations. But what we won't see is the EPA getting even more strength in what they're doing. What we won't see is the FCC getting more strength in what they're doing. What we won't see are the courts taking a bigger line against businesses. What you did see was Neil Gorsuch appointed to the Supreme Court, who looks to be a friend of business and more of an originalist with the Constitution. And these things all push businesses to greater profits. And it can't be overstated, the change in what happened in November from what people thought was coming.
Rodney Johnson's been our guest. He, of course, works closely with Harry Dent to study how people spend their money as they go through predictable stages of life. He writes The Economy and Markets, Boom and Bust, co-authored many, many books, been on featured on CNBC, Fox News, Fox Business, American Nightly Scorecard, lots and lots and lots of programs, and Your Money with David Hayes right here in South Central Indiana. That should be at the top of the list, Rodney. In fact, I'm going to suggest that. I'm going to send in a suggestion to your website that gets added somehow, some way into your bio, and that would be really, really
cool.
Well,
it's the most important. Clearly, it should be first.
Well, absolutely. Rodney, I'll see you, I guess, in October at the Irrational Exuberance Summit. I think that's what it's called. I'm looking forward to that in Nashville. And, boy, it's good catching up with you.
You too, David. Thank you for letting me join your show tonight.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a break, guys. When we come back, we'll continue on with the show as I'm going to talk about the different types of economies that we've been through. We've been through the industrial stage, the tech stage, and I'm going to talk about how we're moving from the service economy into the experience economy, which may be the answer that Rodney was giving us to how we can actually keep our jobs in the future. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks again to my friend Rodney Johnson for being on the show. I have known Rodney for so long, and it's really cool because when I first met him, his kids were really little, and before the show, I was asking, you know, about his kids, and he said his youngest just graduated high school, oldest graduated colleges, so it's really cool. When you have these kinds of long-term relationships, it's really, really nice. And Rodney is a very, very smart guy and has taught me a lot when it comes to economic trends, and I appreciate that very much. So thankfully, he's a friend and takes the time to be on the show. So again, if you want to check him out, go to dentresearch.com. That's dentresearch.com, and you can see all the good stuff that he has put out. You know, as Rodney was talking about the service economy, how things will probably change as technology replaces people maybe putting a screw onto a nut or little things like that, but they won't be able to replace certain things. You know, they're all reactionary, artificial intelligence, not proactive. So as you think about this, I think what we're going to see is people moving into more of the experience economy. You know, we had the agrarian society, the industrial revolution, onto, you know, the tech revolution or whatever you want to call it, economy. Then we kind of moved into what we called the service economy, which is sort of where we see ourselves now, into the experience economy, where I think people are going to want good experiences. So somehow they're going to take your business over this business. So you go into the coffee shop and it smells good and it's comfortable and the coffee's just okay, but you know what? I'm giving up all of that hustle and bustle over here for my Burger King coffee, which I actually prefer to the Starbucks coffee. But why can you charge $5 for a cup of coffee? It's because of the experience. So Starbucks has nailed it. And I think any business is going to have to figure that out. So when you look for investment opportunities, I would look for the companies that you sense are creating a good experience. Like when, and again, none of these are recommendations to buy any of these companies, but when you think about how easy is it to buy stuff on Amazon? How easy is it to order up an Uber? You know, what's the experience there? And versus maybe a clunky website when I was on Bass Pro Shops trying to order some stuff. I'm like, this stinks. I had to go through this and this and this. Not really easy to order on Bass Pro, but super easy to order on Amazon. So I think when you look at companies that you would want to do business with, those are the companies that you'd likely want to invest in as well. And that's the kind of attitude that you want your investment person to have. Again, when you buy a fund, it's going to own tons of different stocks, and usually it's mandated that they can't own more than a certain percentage of a particular company or something like that. But if you have a separately managed account where someone's actually picking the stocks for you, I think you want them to pay attention to demographics, predictable spending patterns, technology, and the experience economy, because those are the companies, in my opinion, that are going to win. You know, right now, as we look at the investments and we look at our attitudes, our phones have been very, very quiet at the office. I mean, we've had a few, new things happen, but for the most part, we're kind of like the utility company. No one calls as long as the lights are still on. And it's been good, right? I mean, it's been good. Your statements look good. Everything's looking good. No one's calling. And I kind of worry a little bit about I think that attitude that, hey, it's all going to be fine. Because it's pretty well known, this investor emotional cycle that we go through. I mean, you go through when things start to tick up, you kind of feel a little bit of relief or hope, optimism. You get excited about things. And then you kind of get a thrill where you say, wow, I feel really good about this stuff. And then you go into euphoric stage. I do not think we're there. I think we're somewhere between excitement and thrill. I think there's enough out there to kind of keep us on our guard, to keep us from feeling euphoric and like nothing can happen. When that happens, that's usually when the 2x4 gets taken out of the garage and knocks you upside the head, when you're just not paying attention. So these are the things you should be aware of. So I don't think we're there, but I do think it's something you need to be aware of. And if you start feeling that way, probably a good time to evaluate your tolerance for risk. I like to take a risk tolerance questionnaire, and I don't base a lot on this. What I do with folks is we figure out what you need to do to get to where you need to be. That's number one. And what kind of return is necessary to get you there? How predictable can we make that return? And then if that return is really low, then let's do a risk tolerance questionnaire, and maybe you're able to take a little more risk. If it's really high, you take a risk tolerance questionnaire and it says, well, I'm really not able to take that kind of risk. I can't sleep at night if I have to get that type of a return. But it's good to take risk tolerance test whenever you are experience times like this where we're kind of thrilled about how things are going, and when things are bad. I was looking through a file this morning and I was pulled out a risk tolerance questionnaire that I gave every client of ours in 2009. And I wanted to see what their attitudes were in 2009 after the market had just gotten smoked for nearly 40%. And I compared that to the original risk tolerance questionnaire that I did when they very first became a client. And interestingly enough, there was a pretty significant difference. I was expecting that maybe, but it was a pretty significant difference. So when the market was really, really low, guess what? Their risk tolerance was low. They didn't want to take any. But back when they first became a client, this particular person, their risk tolerance was average, moderate. But the markets back then, if you look back, were pretty good. So I think that the way we answer these questions change based on our current experience. So I just want people to be aware. I used to say when I coached football, if you're a linebacker, keep your head on the swivel. I mean, that's the way it is with life. That's the way it is with business. That's the way it is with everything. So that's all I'm doing is trying to encourage you to do that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the big show, preview what's coming on next week's show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, folks, welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. Just about a minute or two left in the program. Next week, Doug Hughes is going to be in studio with me. We're going to be discussing retirement security in the developed world. I mean, how does the U.S. stack up? How do other countries view retirement readiness when it comes to this stuff? Now, I find it pretty fascinating. We're going to study the Japanese. We will study the Europeans and the different countries there. We'll study Asia. I just think it's cool to hear and see how other people and other cultures view this stuff and how they become retirement ready. We're going to be having some more classes coming up soon, the retirement readiness classes over at the Center for Lifelong Learning Retirement Planning today. We're going to do one for the general public through a mailer. You'll be able to pick that up. It's in the fall sometime, or you can go over to IB Tech website and check it out there as well. But we also have been going directly to employers and offering the classes through IB Tech for your employees. It is an Ivy Tech class. It's something that I think will come across very, very well for your employees. We've actually done it for Cook, and it went over very, very well. And we have a handful of other employers that have decided to do it as well. And we can do it really inexpensively through the Center for Lifelong Learning. I met with Ivy Tech this week. So we're going to be, if you're a boss, if you're an employer, if you're an HR person, we may very well be knocking on your door at some point this fall, because we really want to go where the people are. Because it does take some effort for people to fill out a registration form, go online. They have to be really, really interested in going. But if you go to the people and make it really easy for them to sign up, I think it bodes well for you as an employer. I think it makes you look good. I think it makes you seem that you really care about your employees. And that's who's going to do it. It's going to be the employers that have that paternalistic or maternalistic view of their employees. So that's the kind of stuff that we've got going on, and I'm looking forward to next week's show with Douglas Hughes. He'll be in the studio with me live to talk about retirement around the world. Doug, he's going to have to put that one together. Also, we're going to talk about long-term care coordination of services. And if you're kind of facing that, you know it's a tough, tough, tough deal. So hopefully that'll help you out as well. So hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. Stay cool, everyone. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.